The opinions expressed on the following program are those solely of the host and in no way reflect those of radio station WPRV, its management, or Citadel Broadcasting. This is The Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein
on AM 790.
Learn how you can maximize customer value
while minimizing waste.
And now, the leader of Lean Nation,
Captain Carl,
at your station for talk and business.
AM 790.
Hey, and welcome to Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talking business, and happy Friday, and thank God it is Friday. I have never felt a Friday where I really believe in that. Thank God it's Friday. It's been a whirlwind here at the Vibration Nation this week with people, with customers, and the customers really, they're the people that are the backbone of our company. Without customers, we're nothing. And, you know, the customers, and you've heard me talk about this before, Jeffrey Gitomer, he's a writer for the Boston paper up there in Boston, and he has a great, great article or a story, The Customer Wants Action, Not an Excuse. And the premise is the customer just wants their pants, and it's up to you to make it happen. And this whole little story is about a customer trying to exchange pants and coming against roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. And finally, he just gives them the pants and he says, you know what? When the management team and the accounting team and everybody on your team figures out how to get me the right size pants, all he wanted to do was exchange pants for the right size, then give me a call. I'll come back and pick up my pants. And, you know, you're just going along, it seems like, in any business. I don't care what business it is. You know, hospital, manufacturing, car wash, fence place, that whammo, man, you get hit. And the customers want all kinds of things. And customers, you know, you got to listen to them. They want it. You got to make it happen. And, you know, more than 90% of people in sales or service don't give an answer. They give an excuse. The only good news is that 80% of that 90% is your competition. So think if you can incrementally change just by 5%, 10%, and keep chomping away at that elephant and giving them good answers, making stuff happen, understanding that they just want their pants, and that's what they keep coming back for. So either you're going to make it great or you're just going to have a headache. One of the challenges many companies have, including ours, is the obstacles, and we have, you know, we're pretty lean, and we still have a lot of obstacles, and, you know, we try and find creative ways to keep value flowing to the customer. That's what lean's all about. I mean, you know, if the obstacles were here every day, I think all of us that are part of this company, we'd go nuts. We would just go absolutely bonkers because we're in the business of pleasing people and getting product out there. You know, and it's tough. It takes a lot of our people. It takes all of us to be engaged and really listen to each other. Sometimes the constraints are external and sometimes they're internal. Often it's a combination of both. Think about it. You know, we have vendors. We have people inside here. We have all kinds of things that are going on. It's a big symphony. You get that symphony out of tune. Oh, my God. You just hear those lemons coming up in the whole symphony. And it's critical to create internal systems that are free of waste. Why do you want to pressure yourself? If you've been listening to Lean Nation, why do you want to pressure yourself more and have systems internally that you can control? Because there's so much that we can't control out there, excuse me, that are laden with waste. Why do we want to do that? And we're really, really, really working hard to do that. And to work with vendors to create partnerships where they understand that our business model demands that they too reduce their lead times and listen to when we want our pants. It's paramount. And boy, some days that's like pulling teeth. We have some vendors that are right on board and they understand, they see this roadmap and they get it done and God bless them. We love them. And those are the people that I want on my team. And we find internal waste. We have to use our tools and be open to creative ideas from everyone so we don't repeat mistakes again and again. There's nothing worse than doing mistakes again and again and again. It just drives me personally bonkers, and I'm sure it drives everybody else bonkers, whoever does it. And make a standard. Make some work instructions. It can challenge It can be such a big challenge that I thank God every day that the problems we have are because we are collectively, everybody here, striving to add value to customers and work towards the true north of same day, next day on 1,300 products. And that's a heck of a feat. It is an amazing, amazing feat. And, you know, we get it right probably 90, 92, 95% of the time. But, boy, when we get it wrong, we personalize it and we internalize it. And not personalize it on each other, but we feel really, really bad. So that's why I said, thank God it's Friday, because I feel bad for some of the boo-boos. And they're boo-boos. You know, because at the end of the day, the customer just wants his pants. They don't care about what happens before or after inside the walls of our company. They just want their pants. So, you know, thank God it's Friday, and thank God today I'm talking to Karen Martin. She is the principal of Karen Martin and Associates. She has practical expertise transforming office, service, government, knowledge work, and creative environments. So, Karen, welcome to the Lean Nation. I just was commiserating here, so help us out of the jam.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much for having me. The customer, indeed, does want his pants.
They want their pants, and you know what? Thank God that we have some lean DNA here, because, boy, if we were the company we were 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, we'd be in the loony bin.
Yeah.
You know, how many companies do you run across that are looking for answers and looking for help? It must be, hopefully it's a lot of people calling you.
Oh, yeah. And the non-manufacturing arena is really very quickly moving toward lean as one of the greatest opportunities for them to solve some of these repeated mistakes kinds of problems. And so I work with many, many different kinds of industries. I do work with manufacturing as well on the office side, but it's really nice to see how many other industries and government are getting into the lean movement.
And, you know, with the economic strife, it just compounds the race to get better, doesn't it, for you? It really, really personifies that we have to do something radically different, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that with organizations dealing with all the global competition that are coming their ways, and then also one of the things I focus a lot on is just becoming an organization that can attract the best talent. And I think that an organization that has a well-oiled machine is so much better positioned to attract those strong employees that are going to make, you know, the delivery of value so much more easy for that organization.
And think about that, too. You talk about talent, and I forget about that. And that's a key indicator because people do have choices. And you want to work in a company that is a lean-type company that empowers people to think and problem-solve, or do you want to work in an organization that, you know what, you come in and you check your brain at the door and you do these tasks?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how I've transitioned in my career from working in the laboratory, you know, scientific side of things. I started out as a scientist, and then I had a period of time where I went into the wellness arena because I personally am very committed to wellness, and I was working with corporate wellness and left that to move into operations design and quality improvement, and that's where I, you know, got to where I am today. But what I love about the lean approach is how much it's a wellness-oriented approach. And when I work with teams, because I do facilitate a fair number of both value stream mapping activities and Kaizen events, mm-hmm. one of the things that gives me personally the greatest satisfaction is helping them create a much more sane work environment that's positive, that they get to use their creative potential. It's not as stressful as perhaps it was in the current state. And we're really improving that whole work environment so that people feel good at the end of the day.
And, you know, that wellness is so key because I've said to the Lean Nation here on the radio that we've stretched together because it's a mental, it's a mind-body dichotomy. And if your mind just gets taxed and beat up and you feel really constrained that you can't change, your body is the outward result of that, that is neck pain, back pain, sickness, depression, all these crazy things. Did you get involved with stuff like that?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, one of the things that's a constant struggle is in the lean world, looking at results that can be attributed to the bottom line versus some of those more collateral benefits, as I call them. I don't like the term soft benefits.
Okay.
I call them collateral benefits. And, you know, getting a CFO to understand that, yes, the bottom line is vitally important as well as the top line, but with all of that, if you don't have a robust workforce and robust processes that allow that workforce to be successful, then the top and the bottom line aren't going to matter anyway.
And you know, you've done some work with government agencies or different places throughout the U.S. Think about the workers there with the stress that they're under, and that is bottom line results type stuff. And they're missing the, and I'm going to say the soft stuff, they're missing that. And what about the talent that's going to get attracted to work for, you know, either a state or a municipality? Before it was used to be a great place to go work, a community feel, and people could make things happen. I don't see that happening. Are you seeing a shift in that, or what are you doing to try and help that along?
Well, one of the things that I find as far as employees' choice of workplace, these days there's not much movement going on at all. People are keeping the jobs they have, and they're not really looking around. But once the economy gets going again, I think that we're moving into an era rapidly where just having a paycheck is not going to satisfy. I just read Daniel Pink's book, Drive, and the surprising truth about what motivates us. And we, you know, like it or not, we've got to accept that this is no longer about a paycheck. You know, it may be for the frontline people, and that's the point he makes more so than anyone else, but if you get into the middle managers and above and the creative types and the scientists and the knowledge workers, the paycheck really isn't the big thing that drives them. And so we have to create work environments that will be fulfilling for them.
And, you know, speaking of Daniel Pink, Lean Nation listeners, go to the TED Network and look up his, they have a bunch of video podcasts and things like that, video clips. Look up Daniel Pink there, and you'll see some really, really cool stuff there. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. And you know what? We're fortunate to have Karen Martin here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about her book, because her book really has some profound things there. It's a workbook. It's a sensical book that people can pick up, and you can go to your team members and get stuff done. So we'll be right back to Lean Nation in just a minute.
Learn how to maximize customer value and minimize waste.
You're lean and mean. You're not too far between either, I bet, are you, huh?
Now, strength, lean into it.
The Lean Nation. Afternoons at 4.
This thing is kind of like velvet pants.
On AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790. I'm your host, Carl Waddenston, and today we have with us Karen Martin. And, you know, Karen's known for her keen diagnostic skills and her rapid results-focused approach to meeting client needs. So, you know, I'm pleased to have her here. You have a book, too, Karen, that's called The Kaizen Event Planner, correct?
Correct.
And, you know, one of the things, why are Kaizen events often viewed in a negative light by TPS Lean experts? Tell me, give me some insight into that statement.
Well, so I think that the goal of any Lean environment is to get continuous improvement occurring all the time at all levels. Kaizen, true Kaizen. And I think that Kaizen events are sometimes viewed as being a bit of a Band-Aid, and they're not going to result in that ongoing continuous improvement culture and environment that we're trying to establish. But in the office, service, and knowledge work arena, I just disagree with that. I think that there are so many issues that are unique to those environments that using Kaizen events is, in my opinion, the only way to shape the culture and get behaviors changed so that we can move into that continuous improvement on a daily basis.
And, you know, my little monologue there I was talking about, generally we're going along here pretty good because our true north is same day, next day for 1,300 products and throughput, innovation, and quality. And this week we fell down on some of our same day, next day, and, of course, it wreaked pandemonium on everybody here, and we saw some pitfalls and some things. You know, you can never – it's dynamic. Everything that happens, cause and effect, is so dynamic.
Yeah.
Do we go back to a Kaizen now? What kind of tools should we use when we think we're going good, and what do we do?
Well, it depends on the area. If you're talking about production, it sounds like you already have a pretty good environment there where you have more informal Kaizen events where you're really just using the elements of a Kaizen event to do everyday business. And your people, it sounds like, have been very well trained to quickly grab a cross-functional team, whoever needs to be involved, and they can actually create the focused environment to do some quick improvements and study root cause. They know how to do root cause analysis, it seems, at least on the production side, from what I've heard. So it doesn't sound like you really need to go back necessarily to a formal Kaizen event to resolve some of those problems. But one of the advantages of the Kaizen event is, in fact, that focus and being able to sequester a team, get them away from their daily jobs so they truly can focus on problem solving.
Yeah, you know, one of the thoughts that I had was, you know, some of the stuff happened more in our office, our backside of the business, you know, just information flow and some of the handoffs, because that's where things happen, you know, it's a handoff and assumptions are made and certain things, and then you get customers that are infamous for calling five different people in your organization and stirring a beehive. So you really need a standard work instruction. How do you control that and still give them what they need? What is there something in your book here that brings the whole team back to center to talk about our true north and say, you know what, these are some of the things that happened this week. How can we stop them from happening? And how can we, you know, not feel as upset and emotional connection to this of falling down? Do you have any suggestions for us?
Well, yes. First of all, running Kaizen events in the office side of manufacturing, I believe is a very effective way to help them understand not only their connection to the customer, because sometimes that's a big problem, that the office side isn't even connected to the customer. And
Right. And
understanding what's value-adding and what's non-value-adding and how to improve quality, you know, just the output quality every step along the way of the information that's being passed along sometimes is really abysmal in the current state. And so taking a team, a cross-functional team, focusing them for one or more days, usually multiple days, sometimes 3, 4, and 5 days, on a particular process problem is what will yield the tremendous results. And the other quick thing about those cross-functional teams, not only is it results-oriented, but typically I'll find that there's a bit of interdepartmental or interpersonal tension between certain individuals or groups within the office environment. And these Kaizen events, I'm telling you, 100% of the time, there's been amazing healing between these departments simply because they didn't understand each other's role in the process.
Yeah, and you know, you really have to be a keen facilitator. And that's why, you know, you have this diagnostic skill and you can take a look at this because of just your background and training, you know, I think helps tremendously because a lot of personalities and a lot of emotional connection gets caught up in these, and you want to lead them down the positive path because they can go awry, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. I have seen some, you know, pretty unseasoned facilitators do many things wrong in Kaizen events, which makes it very difficult to achieve the results they set out to achieve. So a good facilitator is wearing many, many hats, a psychologist, a director, a time manager, a creative motivator, a cheerleader, a mediator. It is a very complicated role, but you know, well-facilitated Kaizen events can yield just tremendous results.
How about if the president, me, just gets out there and cries?
There have been tears in at least 30% of my Kaizen events.
Well, you know, that's why, and you know, I'm not joking around about that because it's a lot of emotion. We put a lot of skin in the game here. We stamp our stamp on everything, you know?
Yep. Yeah, well, the emotion that I see coming out of Kaizen events is always, or almost always, positive emotion.
And it's yes, definitely.
At the end of the result, you know, when you see, wow, we came together, we solved the problem, and it's a good feeling.
So with that being said, what are some of the key success factors in planning? Because you put a big emphasis on planning, you know, a lot of different things that you should do prior to running the Kaizen, correct?
Right. And so let's step back for a second. One thing that I also think is a big problem, getting back to one of your earlier questions about why are Kaizen events viewed in a negative light, I think that there are a fair number of organizations out there guilty of what we call, you know, drive-by Kaizens, kamikaze Kaizens, or one of our colleagues here in San Diego calls them random acts of Kaizen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really critical to tie Kaizen events to strategy. Now, whether that strategy is an actual corporate strategy for the year with the different areas that the organization wants to improve on, or whether it's a value stream map. So I'm a very strong believer in value stream mapping, identifying what the key service lines are, and starting to tackle one service line at a time or one product family at a time, just like you do in manufacturing.
Right.
Yeah, so problem solving is great, but it's nice to tie everything to strategy and have a more organized approach to improvement.
Beautiful. And with that being said, Karen, we're going to take a quick break, and you're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We have Karen Martin with us here. She is a lean transformation expert, Kaizen. She's written a book, The Kaizen Event Planner. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the problem solving, about some of the success things and pre-planning that you do to run a Kaizen event and make it effective and not have a drive-by. We don't want a drive-by Kaizen in the Lean Nation. So we'll be right back after this message.
We're shaking things up.
Back to the Lean Nation with Captain Carl on your station for talk and business, AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talk and business. We have Karen Martin with us here today. And Karen is really passionate about workforce development. I don't care what kind of workforce you have. She wants to develop that workforce and actualize that workforce. You know, she builds a real strong energy with work teams by helping them focus on the organization's key performance goals. And that's what we were talking about just before we went to break. You know, with Kaizens and formulating a Kaizen and not having a drive-by Kaizen, but having real problem solving. Right, Karen?
Right.
And, you know, with that said, how do we prep up to do a positive Kaizen where we get everybody involved, get everybody really inspired, and get that energy flowing? What's some of the key things that we need to be focusing on?
Right. So let's assume that you have a value stream map that you're working from, and it's a Kaizen event that's one of the implementation strategies being used to realize the future state of that value stream map. At that point, you need to scope the event, and mm-hmm. events are often scoped far too broadly. So they need to be fairly narrow and deep in order to get full implementation done by the end of the event. Once it's scoped, then and only then do you select the team, because the scope should dictate who the team members from a function perspective need to be. And getting that
and for the Lean Nation listeners, scoping is looking at the whole value stream map and taking a piece of that. It's just a few different processes or handoffs or things like that, correct?
Correct.
Yep.
So once you identify the functions that need to be involved, then you can figure out which individuals are best suited to be on a team. They have high energy. They like to analyze. They tend to be people who are influence leaders within their peer group. Mm-hmm. And so it's very strategic on how you pick a good team for a Kaizen event.
Okay. And, you know, you've worked in government. How the heck do you facilitate something like this in government? Because so long they haven't even been asked what their input is.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting. Government is very similar to healthcare, and even financial services tend to have some of the same cultural things that have to be gotten through in a Kaizen event. And so once they're unleashed, it's amazing how quickly teams unleash. And, you know, once they're unleashed a little bit and they're given the authority to design a new process at a procedural level, then they tend to be quite effective. The thing that we run up against a lot are policy challenges, and that mm-hmm. really is more the purview of the leadership team. And so we typically have briefings every day to walk through some of those policy issues that are impeding the team's progress from a process design perspective.
Yeah, because, you know, they have accreditations, they're overseen by other groups and things like this. But that's not an impediment to a team really doing it. It's just a vehicle that they have a check-in.
Yes, but the thing that becomes an impediment is if the policies are pretty large. So in other words, they don't ever challenge, you know, regulatory types of policies and compliance types of issues. That's, of mm-hmm. course, we want to make sure that an organization is always compliant. But what happens is organizations set policy that often over exceeds the compliance requirements, far exceeds in some cases, and that's what's actually tying up the process. And so we have to challenge that over compliance tendency in order to get waste out of the process and get flow going through. And that's sometimes quite emotional and very difficult for leadership teams.
And some of those overextensions on policy and things are just functions of trying to have double, triple, quadruple fail safes because people really don't know what the heck the original policy was or what the product or what the service was that they were working on. So they created this complexity instead of simplicity, because true Kaizen in its essence is simplicity, correct?
Right. Yeah. So sometimes it's a matter of taking, you know, four authorizations down to two or three.
Right.
You know, every time you can get a handoff out of the process and not expose the organization to any risk, that's a good thing.
So now we have our team, a really high-energy team, a lot of different, you know, potentially departments that have some issues with the scope or handle the scope and maybe some outliers, and then we have a check-in with policy. What other kind of things do we want to do now during this Kaizen event?
Well, I'm a big believer in a very firm charter. When Mike Osterling and I wrote the book, we were just, you know, we put our heads together and thought about all the best practices we've ever tried and seen and put together a charter. And one of the other items on that charter are very specific measurable objectives. Going in, the team knows what exactly are they charged with doing, so that you don't spend a lot of time figuring out in the middle of the Kaizen event what they're supposed to be, you know, driving toward. It's already designed up front.
So when you do your charter, you had a section in your book here that was the Kaizen commandments.
Yes.
And, you know, that does the charter come before that? Because you need to, you know, if people are doing a Kaizen event for the first time, you still need to know ground rules. And I like those commandments because it kind of gives you a code of conduct of what's going on and things like this. When do you lay something like that out with your team?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends. Sometimes the commandments will be actually sent to them in email form with the charter attached, and so that they can review the charter and kind of get a sense of what's going to be happening in the middle of the event and what code of conduct they are going to be expected to follow. If I can get in front of the team, and I recommend this for all the internal facilitators out there, it's best to pull them together before the event and actually review those commandments and get consensus around the commandments. So that then if someone deviates from them, you can quickly say, you know, we decided that we were not going to be answering our cell phones in the middle of this event, remember? And it keeps people aligned.
Yeah, and, you know, just the simplest one, number one, the team starts and ends the day together. If you're going to be a team, you might as well start together and end together, right?
Yeah, if someone has gone out of the room for even 5 or 10 minutes, the whole world may have changed. You know, depending on where the team's going, they get more and more momentum in these things. And once they get breakthrough thinking going, it can happen very quickly. So if there's one team member that's not there, then you have to do rework to get them up to speed, and it just slows down the progress of the event.
Yep. And you know, those silent objectors that people know that, you know, how do you get people comfortable with that? It's instead of being this protagonist or passive aggressive in there, how do you handle those personalities? Because that comes up in Kaizen events.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I always say when you're forming the team, don't shy away from the people that are known as, quote, whiners, unquote, because the whiners, while they may not have an effective way of expressing their opinion, they typically are right, from my experience. They typically know what's wrong in the process. And once you get one of those people that's a little bit negative to buy into the change, they can become the greatest advocate for the improvement. They often do. So that's a good person to actually have on the team.
And then what are some of the other key things that are important to do to facilitate this Kaizen event?
Well, I think you have to be a pretty good time manager and figure out the PDCA cycle and where, depending on how many days the event is, where are you going to be making that transition from P to D and D to C, et cetera, plan, do, check, act. And so typically, let's say it's a four-day Kaizen event, we'll spend the entire first 2 days in planning. And then they'll really only have the third day to execute. That's both designing the improvement and testing the improvement. And then the last day is implementing the improvement, which in the office and service arena typically involves heavy training and getting everyone trained on the new process.
So how do you come out of a Kaizen event? Because we've hosted a lot of companies here, and we kind of have an innate DNA that we're doing Kaizen all day long. And you, all of a sudden, you unleash these people out of your conference room or wherever they are, lunchroom, for the last 3 days, and now they have to go into the office environment and start rolling out some of the future state initiatives that they have. How do you tell these people what they're going to tell their coworkers when they come out of there? Because that could be a shock.
Yeah, actually, the rollout happens within the Kaizen event. So there's a training component, and team members, we figure out who's going to be the various trainers. There may be three or four people on the team that are training, and they're going out, and they're actually rolling it out to their colleagues during the event. So that by, if the event ends at 4 p.m. on a Thursday and everyone comes back in at 8 a.m. on Friday, the process is being done more or less the new way. There could be some grandfathering going in, but it's pretty rapid improvement. So they're out there meeting with their teams during the event.
Gotcha. So they're not just closed into a room. They're out doing a Gemba and maybe getting some more information, some feedback, and doing small adjustments or articulations.
Absolutely. They're out there in the current state analysis piece. We're at the Gemba, no matter if it's a bunch of cubes or not. And then during the design phase, they may be going out and testing their ideas with their colleagues. And you know, this is how you rebuild consensus so that when you roll it out, it's not these, you know, 8 to 10 people that decided something and no one else agrees with it.
Right. And that's what some people, you know, when they do Kaizens, you talked about drive-bys and all this, that they think that they're going to lock people in a room, they're going to come out, and they're going to roll out the Trojan horse, and everybody's going to say, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So with that being said, we're talking to Karen Martin. We're talking about Kaizen. We're talking about her book, The Kaizen Event Planner, and Achieving Rapid Improvement in Office Service and Technical Environments. So please stick with us here, because this last segment, we're going to ask her about some things that we can do today. We're going to ask her about some of her success stories, some of her shining stars. And you're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We'll be right back.
Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, mornings at 10 at your station for talk and business, AM 790. World champion New York Yankees baseball, every game on AM 790. We're teaching you how to do more with less. Back to the Lean Nation on AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Today we have the pleasure to have Karen Martin with us. And you know, Karen is also an instructor for the University of California, San Diego's Lean Enterprise Program, and San Diego State University's new Advanced Lean Program. So, you know, you're listening to one of the best experts, guys, in the Lean Nation here, right here, Karen. So what are some of your shining stars with some of your Kaizen event planner type book and your process that you use?
Well, as far as actual results at the end of a Kaizen event, it ranges everything from lead time reductions to quality improvement, and occasionally we focus on process time or cycle time, touch time types of improvements, but typically it's speeding the process while improving quality. So outpatient imaging, for example, current state was taking 32 business hours from the time the patient had a CAT scan until the physician got the report, and in one Kaizen event reduced that down to about 11 business hours. Still too long, but it was one Kaizen event, and so you just keep chipping away at these things. Order fulfillment for a medical device, you know, 13 business days to fill it down to 7 days, one Kaizen event. Revenue cycle, going from 10 days from the time the charge could be posted down to 3 days, and those kinds of things, one Kaizen event.
Well, you know, the thing with the hospital thing, and I know I just came back from my son's broken arm skiing, is that a lot of hospitals I've seen, you know, let's outsource it to some other country, and that's their solution. You're talking about Kaizen events that they controlled what was inside their four walls to do this, correct?
Right. Yeah, in this case, it was a matter of the referring physician starting to take business elsewhere. And so the goal was to reduce the time it takes to get the report and increase the quality of that report so that they could start recapturing that lost revenue. And they did.
You know, it's important, and people think of hospitals. They're very cognizant of, you know, their business model there. They have doctors and people that come and perform procedures and things at their place, and if it takes too long, they'll go elsewhere, right?
Absolutely. It's a very competitive world out there, especially with all these freestanding types of facilities that are being developed. You know, hospitals are having a harder and harder time holding on to anything but the most acute care, and that's all often the least profitable of all the different types of care.
Yeah, you know, I've seen it here just in our little Rhode Island, you know, decentralization of different places to go, and you're in and out in no time, and they're losing all that revenue stream.
Yep. Hospitals are very complicated environments, and so to go in there and help them streamline their processes gives them a competitive edge that they haven't experienced, in some cases, in their entire lifetimes as a facility.
Yeah. What are some of the things, you know, the Lean Nation listeners can do to either educate or, you know, to talk to their boss or talk to whoever to get involved with lean processes?
Well, I think that just talking about the whole concept of waste is often an emotional conversation outside of manufacturing. Office mm-hmm. and service world hasn't really thought of their work as being wasteful, and they're sometimes quite offended by that. But if you get them to understand the concept of customer value and what we do and how much of it is really value-adding, that can start opening the door toward leadership believing that there's much to be had here. And then the other thing is that the speed at which you can make change is so important. Office and service environments have hardly ever taken a good look proactively at processes, and so they tend to take months and months and months and months to improve anything, where you can get it done in 4 or 5 days. You really can.
And that's what we've found here, is that we don't have months and months, and we don't have enough staff to do this for months and months and get into analysis paralysis, which is the worst thing that could ever be. It goes back to Tom Peters, you know, In Search of Excellence. Aim and shoot, and if you have a good Kaizen set up, you have a good PDCA cycle set up, you can adjust before you make a big boo-boo. Or am I way off base here, Karen?
No, you're right on. In fact, the P, you know, capital P times 10, the planning of a Kaizen event makes or breaks the success of a Kaizen event, and people tend to just dive in. The uninitiated dive into a Kaizen event, and then they sometimes throw their hands up in the air and say, that didn't work. But what didn't work was adequate planning.
Yeah. And how do you sustain this stuff? Because people wonder, you know, we've been doing it for a long time, and we really get pushed to the board some days. It feels like, you know, it feels like the dream team, you know, the hockey team there, that the Russians are just getting ready to slam us against the boards.
You know, it's very interesting. The sustaining piece is still quite challenging, and it's still not, I don't have magic dust on this one yet. I'm trying to find it. But the whole key for sustaining an improvement is process ownership. And the office and service arena, they're having a hard time with this concept.
The ownership piece in the office.
Right. You know, when you have a process that crosses 7 different departments that report to 3 different vice presidents, it's very difficult to get anyone to authorize one person to monitor and manage that process.
How about co-locating people and knocking down their doggone office walls and putting them in a big pit?
Oh, yeah. Done a fair amount of that. It's one of the more fun things to do. It's also one of the toughest things to do.
It sure is. How do people find you now, Karen? It's been a treat talking to you, but I want people to look you up and find you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Carl. I have a website. It's www.ksmartin.com. I'm also on Twitter and LinkedIn. And I'm based here in San Diego. You can get my phone number on the website, or you can email me, any of the above.
Beautiful. We're going to have you on a Lean Nation Facebook page. So if you have a Facebook page, join us up there, Karen. If you're ever on the East Coast, for any reason, we want you to come by here. We'll get a bunch of lean thinkers in the state, because Rhode Island's goal is to be the first fully lean state in the country, because we're only 1,100,000, 47 by 37 miles. You think we can do it?
Oh, yes, you can.
And we'd love you to be here and teach us some lessons. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. I'd love to come to Rhode Island.
And we're going to have you back on the show either way, regardless. So thank you again.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Carl. Have a great weekend.
You too as well. And you know what, Lean Nation listeners? Get out there. Have some fun this weekend. It's going to be raining, but so what? Get your umbrellas out. Get your big rubber boots out and start stomping in some puddles. And pretend those puddles are waste and muda, and just stomp the heck out of them. So until Monday, have a great weekend.